night, everyone. The Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting will now reconvene. And at this time, we're on item number 12, and we're going to recess as the Story County Board of County Commissioners and convene as the Story County Brothel Licensing Board.
Next up, Chairman, if I may, inasmuch as I hold a pecuniary interest in the business that you're going to be discussing, I'm going to remove myself and join the audience, so I won't be discussing or voting on this.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner Gilman. All right, next up is item number 13. This is discussion of possible action. This is a work hard appeal for Haley Hartman, and she's represented by counsel today.
Good morning. Joey Gilbert for the record, representing Haley Hartman, the applicant, and I'm both the attorney for the Mustang Brothel and Ms. Hartman. We're here today, gentlemen, on a work card denial, and to make things very simple, Ms. Hartman was already awarded a card. She's been working now for over a year and a half. This was her second card. It was a renewal. There have been no issues or problems the entire time she's been working in Story County. I will also provide you notice that the issue that had her card pulled, which was a warrant out of Arizona, she's already gone there and taken care of it, and it was for a petty shoplifting charge in 2015. Now, I tell you that because she's been working this entire time that she had that charge. Something that unbeknownst to her, because she was actually just given a citation. She wasn't taken into custody. That charge has since been dropped. Now, I just wanted to bring this up to the sheriff to just prove that her warrant has been taken care of, the Arizona warrant. And so, although there have been some issues, I believe that it's important to know that the original criminal history did not have the most recent Arizona charge in it, as it was not in her background check. She forgot about the charge in Arizona, which was a marijuana in the car, along with a fake ID. She was a passenger. She made bail that night for $1,000. All charges were eventually dropped that night. No paperwork, no court date. The warrant for shoplifting was from a 2015 charge, as I already mentioned, which was disclosed on her first work card application. So, again, she's been working in Story County with a work card, even considering she had a petty theft charge, and so there's been no situations or no problems while she's been in Story County. It was when she was cited for unregulated prostitution in 2015 that she was picked up for the warrant, which was the shoplifting or petty theft. What brought us here today, again, as I said, is that the shoplifting charge, she did not know that she had a warrant. As she stated, she had been employed here in Story County for some time, and the rest are criminal activity, which was on her criminal history. So technically, the shoplifting charge she was not arrested for, but was given a citation, which is why she was surprised that she had a warrant. So what I'd like to clear up today, as I said, the one issue that she would have had, or which would have been grounds for her denial, has been cleared up. She literally has no other issues on her criminal information that should prevent her from having her work card granted today.
Okay, so at the time of the revocation of her work card, she did have a warrant out.
She did, correct.
So she has since remedied that warrant.
She has, sir. Okay. You should have proof.
All right.
And, you know, one of the things I'd just like to briefly address, and first let me start by saying I had a chance to meet with the sheriff on Friday. I think everything he's doing is lawful. He's acting within his discretion. I can see where in situations like this, when you have someone that's got a history and it pops up, you know, out of concern and public safety, he's going to do what he needed to do. But at the same time, I wanted to make sure that this card was taken at about midnight. There were no questions asked, no information provided. And of course, you know, the young lady now has had to be without work. And so I wanted to see if there's a better way we can address these, but that is something that we can discuss later. But if there's any questions for me or for Ms. Hartman, we'd love to clear those up.
Sure. Give me the time frame one more time on the shoplifting charge.
2015, sir.
And also the possession of marijuana?
2016.
And that was dropped?
Dropped.
Okay, so possession was last year. And where was that charge?
Scottsdale, Arizona.
In Arizona.
Yes.
Okay.
It resulted in bail. There was a jail fine and classes. She's still working on some of those things, and that, I know the sheriff's going to address some of that. I'm sorry. There's those classes from California.
Those are from, I already finished those classes in California, and the one with the marijuana charge, there was nothing leading up after that. No paperwork, no court dates, nothing.
So there's no history of violence?
No, sir. And Your Honor, Commissioner.
New title.
Not yet.
One of the issues here that I'd just like to briefly touch on is, this young lady's 19 years old. 19 years old when this happened. She's 20 now. She's been through a lot. She's done a great job staying legal. She's been legal now for almost 2 years. We'd like to keep her in that position. She's up here. She's doing good. There hasn't been an ounce of issues brought about her in any capacity. And again, we want to keep her legal, want to keep her where she's at, and she's been working here for a year and a half.
Okay. Commissioner McGuffey, do you have questions?
No. Sheriff? A little bit more to it than Mr. Gilbert is offering up, and yes, I'm going to clarify some of those issues. There's been several arrests since 2015. When this initially started, it is a renewal. When it initially started and we did the background check, there was a warrant out of the state of California, which led to an initial revocation of the temporary. That we resolved, which didn't bring it to in front of the board. We resolved that, reissued the card. When we went back through to check, that's when the warrant out of Arizona was discovered. And so, again, the revocation, and this has all been in the last 6 months, 3 months. The two, I think it started in August or September, October, somewhere like that. So, and there's still actions pending in California that Ms. Hartman, or still obligations she has in the state of California. She's demonstrated she does not have a real good history of following through on the things that the courts have told her to do. So how many times are we going to pull this card? So my thoughts would be is she gets all her stuff taken care of with the courts, and then we reconsider.
Okay. Mr. Gilbert, going on with what the sheriff just said, is there a problem with her completing what her obligations are?
No, sir. She only has some classes she has to do in January. They're not court-ordered. She just has to complete them. They're actually community service classes that she's doing through Catholic Charities. And, again, all I would say is when you're 19 years old and your world's turned upside down and you've got all these problems going on, she was doing the best she could, and she's now cleared them up. There have been no future further arrests or no other additional criminal activities since the original ones. I know she may not have taken care of things promptly, but since that time, it all has been taken care of. And as she stands here today, all she has left are some community service classes. And it would serve her in no capacity to not be able to work legally right now here in Story County, where she's got support and a great thing going.
Sheriff, on the you say that the first time that you pulled her work card for a warrant, would that have been a juvenile arrest?
No, I believe that's the 2015 arrest that Mr. Gilbert is talking about.
Oh, okay.
That was out of the state of California. The most recent warrant was out of the state of Arizona.
Okay.
So
there's nothing in addition to the two that Mr. Gilbert went ahead and explained to us?
But there's been six arrests in total since 2015 that have met with various outcomes. And I say there's still the community service program that she's needing to fulfill her obligations to in the state of California. So.
Okay, so there's more arrests than...
Commissioner. I believe that there's the only arrest I have was a warrant out of Paradise Valley. It was for a prostitution charge. There was a warrant out of Phoenix, and there was a Long Beach warrant. What's happened since that time is, as I've said, they've all been taken care of. These are charges that are more than 2 years old. And so what we're trying to do is not go backwards here today. We're trying to make sure this young lady who's put a good foot forward has proven herself in the county to allow her to continue working now that these warrants have been cleared up. And again, these have all happened. Everything we're talking about happened prior to her working here at the Mustang.
If we consider reinstating her license, the one hiccup and she's done.
That's absolutely acceptable, sir. She's had no problems here.
You're suggesting like a final?
Final. I mean, I understand the sheriff's concerns here, and
as do I, and I understand he wants her to finish what she needs to do.
I can see this person ending up back in a bad situation if she's let go, to speak, let go from her job.
If she's not able to work,
I can, you know.
Yeah.
So I would say this would be the last straw. One hiccup and you're out.
Absolutely. Agreed.
Sheriff?
Well, I have a different perspective, and there have been arrests while she had her previous work card, according to the criminal history. So we've given more than adequate number of chances for her to meet her obligations. And that's why I say in January she takes her classes, meets her community service requirements in the state of California. I'd be more than happy to entertain it again after that point in time, but I think she's had plenty of chances and has squandered them.
Well, I tend to agree with you. On the other side, I want to look at her age, too, and maybe immaturity on being able to handle things. I think that Commissioner McGuffey's put it forward, if we make this like the last chance offer, and if she were to violate this, she'd never work in Story County again. I know that she works with
these. I got a question. Is there any implications if she doesn't finish these courses in California?
I'm sorry.
Was there any implications should you not finish the classes? Would you be arrested or would you be fined, or do you know what the status is?
I don't.
If you don't know, don't.
Huh?
Based on what I've seen, it looks like a program that she has to get finished or she's going to face a fine. But again, I don't want them to speak. I'm happy to clear that up. But what I would suggest is another opportunity would be if she doesn't have this done, by the time she's supposed to have it done, the sheriff could take her card.
Yeah, I would just
simple.
Say she would have to finish.
Put the responsibility on us, we'll have it done.
Because if she's going to get fined, then that means she's not playing our game here.
Okay.
I have no doubt since I've come on board that she's going to handle this. She's handled all her warrants and everything herself, flew down there, handled it, came back, no issues. And again, she's just trying to do what's right and stay legal and put her best foot forward, and I'd love to see the county help her.
Well, again, I hate to be a stick in the mud, but she had the obligations in the state of Arizona that she knew about when we reissued the card after the California warrant caused the card to be pulled. When we checked, when the deadline came and went for that one, that's when we checked with Arizona, and she failed to meet that obligation, which was just in November or October. That's what led to the current situation where her card got pulled, and it was just on the 20th of November, which was well after, it was 5 days after we pulled the card, that she finally took care of the Arizona issues. So this is not anything from a couple of years ago. These are ongoing events.
Okay.
And I understand her age. I understand people make mistakes, but I also understand people have to be responsible.
Well, before I ask Commissioner McGuffey to go ahead and make a motion one way or the other on this, we'll go ahead and take public comment. Mr. Ayers.
Good morning. Steve Ayer, longtime local. Growing up in this community, you know, I know a lot of us made a lot of really stupid mistakes at that age and didn't realize it, and you know, it takes a long time to get that maturity going. And being in this industry, a lot of us are familiar with it, being in this area. You've got somebody that wants to make their life legal and do the right thing, and I kind of think that it's incumbent upon you to start thinking, and your friends need to help you out, that you got to go down the right path and work honestly and sincerely, because I think if you guys turn her down, the problem is she's going to be back out on the street in a real dangerous world, and we all hate to see that. And I'm kind of one myself for, you know, giving that extra chance. It seems like she's sincere, but I think it's really important to take that into consideration. And Mr. McGuffey, your idea of a one shot and you're out deal, I think, is really a good way to do that. But, you know, make it to where you've got to make this right. You've got a real good possibility of the future. And I just hate to see somebody thrown out being young and making stupid mistakes. So, you know, that's kind of my input from having been young and stupid up here. And thank God people looked out for me and kind of kept me on the straight and narrow. So that's just kind of my opinion on it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Yeah.
Sure.
Say ditto,
I think you would.
I don't know much about this circumstance, and I'm going to go out on a limb, especially with three attorneys and a former attorney in the room. I may be treading into the innocent until proven guilty. And to be honest with you, I was a bit distracted during Mr. Gilbert's presentation with authorizing drones to fly over Virginia City tomorrow so we can look at the sewer system. But my suggestion would be, if you're inclined to do this last chance agreement, if you will, to put it into personnel terms, that you consider an item that frequently comes up, I think, and causes some of the appeals, and that's the issue of arrest versus conviction.
Sure.
If you're truly sincere about the last chance, and I realize that people are innocent until they're proven guilty, but I would suggest considering a condition that says violation of that last chance also includes an arrest at least until it's adjudicated. And if that's acceptable, you know, to the parties present, that might be a reasonable interim step.
Again, we would be more than happy to agree to those terms. Again, she understands what's going on here. And I think, you know, it wasn't until her card was taken that she realized, you know, this is an important deal, and that's why I'm standing here before you.
All right. I'm going to continue on and ask if there's any more public comment on this. Is there another question?
Yeah, I don't think I'm asking our attorney here. I don't think the commissioner, because the commission can say that if she doesn't cut it, she gets arrested.
No, that was my point. No. I'm sorry. My point was, you're offering her a last chance. Fail one more time, and the sheriff will revoke your license.
Yeah.
My suggestion is to consider, under the definition of failure, to be an arrest anywhere, be it from Story County, Washoe County, okay, Arizona, or whatever.
It sounded like you said we would arrest.
No. No.
Pat's going to go out and arrest her.
Yeah, we'll send Pat out.
So if I understand it correctly, as long as she's not arrested or have any more contact with law enforcement or any of the other issues the sheriff has pointed out, until she is finished with all her programming and whatnot, she can't have another situation or she loses her card permanently.
Correct. If she doesn't finish her courses, she's going to get a citation.
Sure.
That's, to me, that's all it takes, and she's out. So she's got to finish that.
Well, that was a recommendation of the county manager that hasn't been put into a motion yet.
Just to know for the record that the ordinance is already written like that, that an arrest is a reason to have your license revoked. It doesn't arrest and or conviction. So that's already in, that's the way it's written. So we don't really have to add that because it's already there.
Okay. And with that there, once it's adjudicated, then you can decide whether you're going to reinstate a work card or not.
Or the arrest, as the sheriff said.
Well, no, but if arrest has been adjudicated where you're found not guilty, then you're not guilty.
Sure.
So.
Right.
I mean,
yes.
Not that I went to lawyer school.
Yeah. Right? No. But I'm saying,
okay.
Is there a school for lawyers? School of Hard Knocks?
What's the pleasure of the board?
Well, okay, I'll stick to my original plan. I'll make a motion to return her work card under the conditions that she finishes her classes in January and no more incidents. Any incident will revoke your license for life.
Yes, sir.
Why?
Or your card.
In Story County. All right. Well, yeah. Okay. You guys good with that?
It just has to be.
So it's a stipulation.
All right. You might want to add that motion that if the event that her work card is revoked again, this is the last chance. In the event that her work card is revoked again, it'll be permanent.
Right.
And we won't even accept. We won't accept your office, Joey, or anybody else to go ahead and appeal it. So.
So, in addendum to that, in the event your work card is revoked, that will be the end of it.
Okay. Revoked for a lawful purpose, or just for any reason?
Revoked.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
Well, it has to be a lawful purpose. Okay. Well, and you're stipulating to this on the record?
I am stipulating to it.
Okay.
Okay, so with that, I have a motion to go ahead and reinstate.
Holly Hartman. Haley Hartman, sorry.
Haley Hartman's work card. With the condition that if she doesn't complete her classes as she's been ordered by a court, or if she were to go ahead and have her work card revoked again by the sheriff, that this is the last chance, and that's it. So it's been moved. It's been second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Sheriff.
The other half of that?
The other half of that?
He's saying
the
no.
The other half is usually those opposed.
Yeah.
There's a yay, there's a nay.
Nay.
Nay. Okay. So the vote is 2-1. Name is Hartman. Good luck. And
be good.
Be good? Yeah. Okay. Mr. Gilbert, thank you for...
Thanks, sir.
Being here today. At this time, we're going to adjourn as the Story County Brothel Licensing Board and reconvene as the Story County Board of County Commissioners.
This is the book. Is it a presentation that's going to be long, or what is it?
It shouldn't take too long.
It should keep be up.
Brings us up to item number 15.
Can be. I'm going to present.
Okay.
Right, Pat, I'm in chronological order now. 15.
Okay.
Approval of Resolution 17-479 regarding the request by the Director of the State and Nevada Department of Business and Industry to approve the findings of fact pertaining to the issuance of industrial development revenue bonds in the amount not to exceeding $25 million for the purpose of assisting in the financing of constructing and equipping a facility owned by Fulcrum and operated by Fulcrum Bioenergy to be used for converting municipal solid waste into renewable fuel products located at 3600 Peru Drive in the Reno Tahoe Industrial Center, and or the improvements to the equipping of the facility owned and operated by Fulcrum, used for the preliminary sorting and processing of municipal solid waste located at 350 Saddle Court and Mustang, Nevada, both locations being in Story County, Nevada. Approval of the county is required pursuant to NRS 349.5802.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'll kick off and then I hope you defer. I am pleased, very pleased to say would be, if you approve it, as staff is recommending, this is, I believe, our third resolution to occur in 2017 in full support of a great company with a great forward-looking process that's very eco-friendly. That, of course, being Fulcrum Energy. So I want to introduce friends that are in the audience. I'll start out, of course, with somebody who we might as well just make a resident up here regardless, and that's Jeannie Benedetti with Fulcrum. Jeannie, welcome back yet again, and thank you for coming up. Now, the next one you've seen before, I believe, and that's Terry Reynolds. Terry's the Deputy Director of the Nevada Department of Business and Industry. Kind of one of Nevada's best-kept secrets, but I got to tell you, when you get them on your side, like Fulcrum and Story County have, they can move mountains. And third, I want to introduce you to the new and improved version of Bruce Breslow. Mr. Breslow has moved on from as Director of the Nevada Department of Business and Industry, I believe, to the PUC. And in his place is a young lady that I've worked with for many, many, many years, usually in the housing side, but now she's come across to the good side and is looking at business and industry, and that's our good friend C.J. Matthey. C.J., welcome to Story County, and thank you for being here. I can staff this, but I think, again, honestly, I'm going to be very brief in my comments and just ask either C.J. to come up, and Terry, and if she desires, Jeannie, yet again, to kind of tell you where business and industry fits in. Back in sometime this year, August, we met and approved a resolution essentially identical to this one, resolving to support the director's findings relative to a bond issuance for Fulcrum in the amount of $150 million. As Fulcrum really makes steam and makes stuff happen, it's becoming evident that that momentum is going to cause additional needs that hopefully can be addressed with additional financing through our friends at Business and Industry, specifically in this case, 25 additional million that may go into the biorefinery itself and may also go into the feedstock system that is already up and operational in the Mustang area of Story County. So the resolution is virtually the same with minor wording. It's been cleared by legal counsel, Mr. Loomis. And again, I always want to note key to all this is one of the director's findings, in this case, Ms. Manthey's, which are outlined on pages 4 through 6 of the attachments I provided you, and that that is that the county is in no way liable for any of this. This is just an endorsement and a full support of both Fulcrum's efforts and Business and Industry's great actions in helping businesses in the state. So with that, I would encourage you to welcome CJ and Terry at least up, and maybe they can tell you a little bit more and also tell you a little bit about Business and Industry.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being so patient with us today. We've got a long agenda, and wish we could have moved it up a little bit quicker for you.
So, yeah,
CJ,
no worries.
Terry, thank you for being here.
Yeah. Well, good afternoon, Chair and Commissioners. For the record, my name is CJ Matthey, and I am proud to serve as the Director for the Department of Business and Industry. And the role that the Department of Business and Industry plays in this transaction is that we are the issuer of the up to $25 million worth of industrial revenue development bonds. And so what that means is that we issue these as revenue bonds. And for you and for us, what's important to note, as Mr. Witten has mentioned, is that these are conduit bonds. And what that means is that the payment for the bonds, as well as the liability of the bonds, all flows through to the borrower. And so the state does not have any liability, nor does the county, for the payment of the bonds. And that's really important for us. And yesterday, the Board of Finance did approve this transaction for the $25 million. And it has always been part of the financing plan for Fulcrum. They had anticipated having $175 million worth of bonds to help support their $300 million project. And with this project, I just want to note it's very strong because of the fact of the heavy equity contribution involved in the project. And the initial financing was the $150 million, so thank you very much for supporting the findings of facts for that portion of the transaction. It was very successful and very robust as far as the investor demand and the $150 million worth of bonds. They had $150 million worth of bonds, but they had $600 million worth of requests. And so they had a very attractive interest rate, and we are expecting the same thing with this additional $25 million. And the other thing I wanted to point out is that we had originally planned on having this $25 million come to the Board of Finance and the County Board of Commissioners next year, but what's happening at the federal level has made us accelerate our plans. At the federal level, they are working on the tax reform plan, and one of the components of the House version is they want to eliminate private activity bonds, and that's the overall financing mechanism for the bonds that we use to support the Fulcrum project. And so we appreciate you having this on your December board agenda, because we do need your approval before we can approve the overall sale and the closing of the bonds. And with that, I'll just stop there in case you have any questions. Terry, did you want to add?
No, I just, this project has been going on for a long time, and I think you realize that, but not everybody does. It's been well over 10 years that it's been in the making. It's a tremendous project. It's really one of a kind for Nevada. Hopefully it'll be spread out throughout the United States, but it's truly unique type of project for us in Nevada, and we're really honored to be part of this first initial building of this project within our state. So with that, I hope that you approve it today. Thank you.
Thank you,
Director. Thank you, Director and Assistant Director. Chair and fellow commissioners, I always look forward to the opportunity to stand before you and tell you about our progress that we've been making. And on August 27th, we did close on the first round of issuance, and by the 31st, we issued a full notice to proceed to our engineering procurement contractor, and so the project is on path, full bore ahead, and you should see the contractor mobilizing in the April-May time period next year. We'll do a groundbreaking, of course, before that, but we're very excited at Fulcrum to see this project finally on the path to move forward, and you'll start to see activity out there. We should be finishing construction by the latter part of 2019 and starting the commissioning of the biorefinery and the production of fuel in the first part of 2020. So it'll be exciting next few years as we work with the county staff to get our building grading permits and whatnot. And there will be some further equipping of the feedstock processing facility to take the municipal solid waste and prepare it so that it meets the specifications that we need at the biorefinery. So we will be making some further investment at that facility in Mustang as well. So thank you very much. Do you have any questions?
Yeah. Just a comment that... Yeah. Jeannie, we've been working together a long time, and if perseverance counts,
yes,
you're the epitome of success. And I'm just delighted. This is for me, in some ways, a celebration. You've reached the pinnacle of success. Thank you all very much for all the help.
Thank you for your comments. Thank you.
Wonderful project.
Yeah, it's a huge project.
Yeah.
Huge project. It's great.
Turning garbage into jet fuel.
Okay, we'll go ahead and we'll open up for public comment. Anyone like to speak to this, on this resolution? Hearing none?
Okay.
I get a motion to approve.
I, Commissioner Jack McGuffey, move to approve the approval of Resolution 17-479 regarding the request by the Director of the State of Nevada Department of Business and Industry to approve the findings of fact pertaining to the issuance of industrial development revenue bonds in the amount not to exceed $25 million for the purpose of assisting in the financial construction and equipping a facility owned by Fulcrum and operated by Fulcrum Bioenergy to be used for converting municipal solid waste into renewable fuel products located at 3600 Peru Drive in the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, and or the improvements to and equipping of the facility owned and operated by Fulcrum used for the preliminary sorting and processing of municipal solid waste located at 350 Saddle Court in Mustang, Nevada, both locations being in Story County, Nevada. Approval of the county is required pursuant to NRS 349.580. Section 2.
Thank you. I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Moved and second to approve Resolution 17-479. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you. CJ, stick around. I'll get the resolution for you.
Okay, next up is item number 16. This is discussion and possible action. Review and possible approval of communication tower lease extension to SBA Communications for an additional 65 years when the current lease expires in 2034. Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Chairman, with all due respect, council has not reviewed and approved this
these contracts, so I'm recommending this be continued till next year, please.
All righty.
And for additional staff input, this request was not submitted conforming to policy. I was not aware of it until it showed up on the agenda. And just also for the record, without knowing any specifics, because all I know is what's in your commission packet, I would tell you point blank, staff, coming from me as your senior staff, will never recommend approval of a 65-year contract, period.
It seems excessive.
Okay. So we want to continue this to the first or second meeting in January.
Providing that Mr. Whitten and council approve it, we'll put it on the agenda at that period of time.
So you repeat to be determined? Or?
We have a long way to go. Put it on the 16th.
16th? Okay. All right. So if we can go ahead. Is there any public comment regarding this item? All right, hearing none, if I can get a motion to continue this to January the 16th, 2018.
I'll make a motion to continue this item to January 16th at 10 a.m. in this courtroom.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded to continue until next year. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Item number 17, discussion of possible action, review and possible approval of TRI, public-private partnership schedule of project revenue and net revenue and supplementary information for the year ending June 30, 2016.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hugh Gallagher and also Connie Christensen, who is the lead auditor for this examination and audit. I will tell you this, that in 2016, the gross revenues that were received on behalf of the Tahoe Regional Industrial Park and the partnership amounted to $5,299,000 and some change, which was an 8.64% increase over the prior year. That is extensively because of increases in fire fees and building permits. If we go back to 2013, that number was $3.7 million. So between $3.7 million and $5.2 million or $5.3 million, we can see there has been some very good business going out into the park. With regards to the audit and anything those have, if you have those questions for Connie Christensen, I will put her on the mic.
Hello. Excuse me. I'm Connie Christensen, and I performed the audit, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Very good. Thanks for being here today, Connie.
Sure.
Looking better in the industrial park. Do you want to give us an overview? Can you give us an overview? Can you give us the bird's eye view?
Okay. Well, it was an unmodified opinion on the schedule of project revenue and net revenue. Real and personal property taxes continue to increase, as well as inspection and building fees and things overall. In general, the activity continues to increase. The TRI owners did hire a consultant since then that examined potential other revenue sources that have historically not been included in this report because of the availability of or the measurability of that information. So we have recommended that the county and the TRI continue to work together to determine any additional items that may be included in future audit reports, and at what rates?
And if I may, why don't we just give you an updated status on where those are as recently as last week. Mr. Gallagher, myself, and Mr. Gransberry, absent being a very sick deputy district attorney at the time, and I don't mean that in the way you might take it normally, met and we discussed, and we're dialing in. These have been ongoing conversations for probably better than a year. They involve trying to find measurable ways to assess centrally assessed taxes within the industrial park. Franchise utility taxes on both gas and electric, looking off the top of my brain, which isn't always good. Fuel taxes, those three areas, there seems to be a pretty good consensus on measurability. Sales and use tax, there still isn't. We just don't know what goes on within the park or what goes on without. But we pretty much have 75% of it dialed in into a stipulation agreement that hopefully would come before this commission before Connie needs to commence her 16-17 audit.
Right.
All right. Thanks, Pat. Jack, do you have questions for Connie?
No, not at this time, thank you.
Are we open for public comment? Anybody like to comment on the audit?
Mr. Chairman, in an abundance of caution, I'm going to recuse from discussing or voting this item in as much as I have a pecuniary interest in the subject matter of this agenda item.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner Gilman. I don't have any more questions.
Jack, that's nice. No, it looks pretty good.
Good to go. No public comment? Okay. We'll go ahead and get a motion to approve this audit.
Yeah. I hereby make a motion to approve the TRI public-private partnership schedule of project revenue and net revenue and supplementary information for the year ended June 30th, 2016.
I'll second your motion. Move to second to approve this. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you for spending all day with us.
Yeah.
Hey, Connie. Thank you. All right. Moving along now. This next item is item 18, discussion of possible action, review and possible approval of Story County audited financial statements for the year ending June 30, 2017.
Mr. Chairman, I had hoped that we would have had something from DelPietro and Thornton on this. However, their audit has been delayed, not through any fault of our own or their fault. Basic problems they're having now is with fixed assets. They cannot verify the beginning balance, so therefore they can't verify an ending balance. And not only fixed assets, but accumulation depreciation. We have tried to schedule a meeting with the prior auditors to have some of this explained. And if not, then he will have to do that through alternative testing, which means he has to go back through probably to 2010 and verify assets that we purchased from there to get to the financial statement or to get to the depreciation schedule. So I don't anticipate this being a long process, but I did have to file a letter of exemption with the Department of Taxation. Gives us about 45 days, and so as soon as these financial statements are delivered, I have 30 days, or we have 30 days, in order to bring it before the board.
Okay. Isn't the beginning fund balance, isn't that supposed to be what the ending fund balance was of the prior year?
I know.
It doesn't carry forward?
Part of the process when you change CPA firms is that they have to really go back and verify the beginning balance because there should be work papers on that.
Okay.
In this case, they're having a problem reconciling the fixed assets to the June 30th, 2016 audited statement. And the same thing with the corresponding depreciation. So we'll get that rectified this week or next week for sure.
Okay.
All right. So we'll have a meeting with the prior auditors.
All right. So
you need to move this to January 16th?
It's possible when the audit, everything in the audit pretty much for the funds which have been delivered, but the depreciation schedule and some of the footnotes have not. So I anticipate that probably going probably by the first or second meeting in January.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, this is the first I've heard of this. I knew that there were some difficulties in reconciling with the former auditor, and clearly I do not blame our comptroller's office or DPA from Thornton, but it's still disappointing nonetheless. This is probably the umpteenth year we have miserably failed to meet our established audit deadlines. I'd encourage the commission, as you continue it, to continue it to a very specific date. And my recommendation is continue it to January 2nd. We may not be ready, but at least we're keeping our eye on it,
right,
and we're not dropping the ball. And then our comptroller can keep whatever pressure on he needs to. Perhaps our legal counsel needs to talk to our former auditors. But this is, in my opinion, unacceptable.
I will say, Mr. Chairman, their audit work is not for lack of effort. I'll tell you that.
I know that, and I can see where, since this is the first time we've changed auditors in how many years?
35.
Probably. Yeah, so, okay.
And I'm not faulting our current auditor.
Yeah, well. All right, before I ask for a motion to continue this to the January 2nd, open for public comment. All right. Hearing none, if I get a motion to continue this to January the 2nd, 2018.
I'll make a motion to continue this to January 2nd, 2018 at 10 a.m. in this courtroom.
Second the motion.
Moving to second to continue to January the 2nd. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right. Moving along now to item number 19. I think we're halfway done now.
Yeah.
Approval and acceptance of the trial court improvement, which is also known as a TCI grant from the Nevada Administrative Office of the Courts in the amount of $29,456.92, project total for a Jefferson audio video arraignment system for the courtroom. Actual requested amount of $20,619.92. The match is $8,837 to be shared equally by the Story County District Court and Justice Court. Justice Court Special Fund will be used to provide $44,1850 of the match. So, whose hand was Judge Harrington? Are you handling this? Come on up. Be our guest.
Okay, as you can see, Judge Harrington for the record, this is a grant for Jefferson Audio Visual Arraignment System, just like the, we have JAVS in the courtroom, that's these cameras, it's the same company. It'll allow me to, and district court judges, to conduct arraignments with inmates. They can stay in the jail facility, we conduct the arraignment. It's similar to the Easy Cart. We call that an Easy Cart persuasion system that's behind you there. That's what we use for evidence in the courtroom, and I got a grant for that a little over a year or so ago. But it'll be a screen where you're in open court. I can talk to the inmate. Everybody here can see the inmate. The inmate can see me, and we can conduct an arraignment without having to haul the inmates in. There'll be times when the inmates will have to be here, but arraignments, usually they don't have to be physically in my presence. So that's what it's for, and I'm going to use $4,418 from my JOP court facility fund. Right now we have about $12,000 in there. And so did you have any other questions about it?
No, I have a comment. I think it's a terrific idea, Judge. I think that moving into the age of technology, I mean, if you can go ahead and make the process a little bit smoother by not having to go ahead and transport, you know, mm-hmm. accused up here back and forth, so it takes time away from the jailers and the bailiffs and time here in the courtroom and the safety of everybody else. So
yeah. Yeah. And in the course of improving, you know, less time for jail personnel, you know, by having a court services officer, which we've had that for a little over a year now, we did that with the special funds money. It alleviates the sheriff's office from having to have sheriffs come up and act as bailiffs. We've got our own bailiff now. Another grant was that I got was for that little system that you walk through when you come into the courtroom, and it's all in an eye towards promoting safety for everybody in the courtroom and doing it at a cost-effective amount. Okay. Any other questions?
I don't have any. Jack, Lance?
I recall trying to do this when I was a judge, and the district court wasn't really on board with it at that time. So my hat's off to you getting them on board.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice to get them on board with some things.
That's good. Okay. Okay. Open up for public comment.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
I don't have any more.
Right on. It's like there's a
no public comment? All right. With that said, can we go ahead and get a motion to approve and accept this this grant? Number 19.
Yeah. I'm on the wrong page here.
Uh-oh.
I want to see the motion.
So how about I move to approve the trial court improvement TCI grant from the Nevada Administrative Office of the Courts in the amount of $29,456.92 for a Jefferson audio video arraignment system for the courtroom.
Very good. Got a motion?
I'll second that.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Very good. All right, moving along now to item number 20, discussion and possible action. I guess we're asking to continue this to the January 2nd meeting. These are amending these county co-title 17 subdivisions. And you want to speak on this also?
I do. There's a need.
Go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. This item is being obviously requested to be continued to January 2nd. The reason's pretty self-evident, so there's some cleanup and legal matters and little things to address in all of these updates. I will just give you a heads up that there is a very high chance of a continuation occurring on January 2nd. I know that's not exactly what we have here, but I'll probably likely continue this to the January 16th County Commission meeting, but I'll do that at that time. Because as the ordinance has kind of morphed and it's taken a little bit of time, I feel an abundance of caution to go ahead and just repost it, renotice it in the newspaper, start the ball again, and that'll allow this to go ahead and work its way through the whole system and the Planning Commission for them to take action as well.
That's fine, because there's a lot in this.
There is.
So we want to make sure we get it right before we approve it.
I highly agree with that.
It's easier to do it right without going back and correcting it. All right. Any questions for Austin?
No,
sir. Okay. Any public comment regarding this item?
For the record, Sam Toll, Gold Hill. Great to see you here today, District Attorney Langer. Gentlemen, just for the record, as you shared, there's an awful lot of stuff that's being dealt with in this specific item. Is there a place that we can all go to? Was it inside the packet and I missed it in this meeting so that we can follow along and watch the bouncing ball?
Yes, we've been working on this with the Planning Commission about a year, and I've announced all this material has been posted on the website. I've repeated that at these meetings quite a bit. And what I do on the websites is I put the suffix of the file name is the date that you're looking at, so you can see if you're looking at a new draft or old draft. And when we start getting into a little bit of too many colors, right now you can go on there and see gray highlights, and it'll show that in the drafts. You can see all the most recent stuff since, I believe, the 15th is when the Planning Commission heard it last.
Thank you.
All right. Any other public comment? All right. If I can get a motion to continue this to January the 2nd, 2018.
Well, I'll make a motion to continue these readings to the January 2nd, 2018 meeting at 10 a.m. here in the courtroom.
I'll second your motion.
All right. We'll move to second to continue to January the 2nd. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All right. Moving along now to item number 21. This is a discussion of possible action. This is on here because a couple of meetings ago, there was a retiree from the fire department who came in asking for a PERS buyout and was denied by this board. And at that time, Commissioner Gilman asked that this be reviewed by staff and brought back to us at a later date. And today is that later date, and find out where we stand with this. So with that, I think Mr. Gallagher, if you want to go ahead and take the lead on this. I think it's incumbent to note that I think County Manager Whitten, you've been advised of your due process rights. Am I correct on this?
I've waived proper notice of those rights where certain elements are required to discuss
okay.
the elements of my job okay. by NRS.
All right. Very good. So I want to make sure.
I have not waived due process.
Okay. I'm sorry. I misspoke.
Okay.
Obviously, misspoke. Okay, Mr. Gallagher, it's forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Per your request at a regularly scheduled meeting of the Story County Commissioners, dated October 17, 2017, the following represents additional monetary payments to three Story County department heads in December of 2016, January of 2017, and June of 2017, who had already announced retirement dates. In an effort to disclose these transactions, I have listed the following index and will comment on each schedule. We will only address two of these individuals under this agenda item, and we will address one individual under the Story County Fire Protection Board. Exhibit A represents the retirement payments, as we call them, for this period. There are two, please note there are two corrections on Exhibit A. The word bonus noted on the schedule should be replaced by buyout. As I have found no documentation that these transactions were bonuses. In addition, the effective date of the current ASME or ASCME contract is July 1, 2016, not July 1, 2017. Monetary payments to the above employees who opted into a Nevada Public Employees Deferred Compensation Plan in the amount, total amount of $144,215.41 were distributed as follows to the two individuals that we're discussing under this agenda item. Mike Nevin, $39,335.61, and Dean Haymore, $49,793.01. The amount of each individual's payment into the deferred compensation program was equal to one additional year of PERS calculated at each recipient's retirement date, which was December. It was calculated as if they would have left in December 2016. And these are reflected in Schedules A1 through A3. The exhibit also reflects an annual leave and sick leave buyout for Mike Nevin in the amount of $24,670. In addition, there is a PERS payment that we will discuss in the separate agenda item. For monetary payments to Mike Nevin, Exhibit A indicates monetary payments in the amount of $39,335.61 and an annual and sick leave buyout of $24,670.00. Exhibit B reflects how this transaction occurred. Nevada Deferred Compensation, or VOIA, is normally used by employees to contribute pre-tax income from their paychecks. In this particular case, there was only one document presented to the comptroller's administrative assistant during the payroll week of December 16, 2016. You will notice next to the page VOIA is the amount of $36,000 and the amount and the description of note for payout. Exhibit B reflects the same type of transaction for $3,335.61 for the payroll period ending January 13, 2017. As in the prior documentation, there is also no initials or signatures authorizing this transaction and only for the word for buyout balance. Exhibit 2 reflects a notice of termination of employment for Mike Neto. This represents the entire monetary transaction on July 13, 2017, and the categories of payment. Of particular concern to my department is the calculation of the vacation pay for $19,670. Under the current AFSCME collective bargaining agreement dated November 1, 2016, and effective July 1st, 2016, the terminated employee will be compensated for the total number of hours, which should have been 240 hours. It was, I think, reflected that the total number of hours for Mr. Nevin was 362.99.
Is that sick? Annually?
No, that was just annually. Sick leave, there was no problem.
Oh, okay.
Sick leave, I had no problem. Exhibit B3 reflects comments and documentation from the Human Resources Department and County Manager Whitten on the vacation pay for Mike Whitten. Next is monetary payments to Dean Haymore. If you go back to Exhibit A, the monetary payments in the amount of those monetary payments were in the amount of $49,783.39. Exhibit C reflects an initial payment of $27,600 to VOIA for the payroll week ending December 16, 2016, and the document is noted for buyout. C2 reflects the second half of the payment of $22,000. $183.01 for the payroll week ended June 16, 2017. Note at the bottom of the page of this transaction that it was approved by County Manager Whitten on June 13, 2017. I will now go to my comments, as I will for the next agenda item. And in conclusion, these transactions reflect a buyout for possibly early separation of service. There is, however, no documentation to demonstrate that these transacts are similar to those constructed in the past. Past recipients were required to complete and sign a document similar to Exhibit E. If this was not considered early separation, but additional remuneration for quality of service, then a pay request form, which is Exhibit F, should have been completed. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my comments on the transaction part of this for this agenda item.
Okay. And just for the record, as far as the notice that County Manager Whitten waived, that is just to tell him that he would be discussed, performance would be discussed. He has right to counsel, and it's in regard to the open meeting law, that he knew that this was all going to be an open meeting. So as far as the due process issue, that is not what the notice was about. It was that these things would be discussed, and he had a right to counsel if he chose to at this particular meeting.
Thanks for the clarification. All right. So here we are. I'll start off with asking my two colleagues here if you have any questions for Mr. Gallagher.
Not for Mr. Gallagher, other than from my desk, to thank him very much for this comprehensive report. It's what we asked for. I think he's done a professional job of information, and I thank you for that effort.
Pat, Jack?
I've already been in discussion with Mr. Gallagher over this, and it's a repeat of what he shared with me already.
Okay. Well, I think I know where we are and how we got here. I've had conversations with Mr. Gallagher, and I've had conversations with Mr. Whitten, so just trying to look at maybe what the format should be. Should I ask you, Pat, if you want to go ahead and speak to this?
I'd love to.
Okay. Why don't we do that?
First off, I want to clarify what I contend is a overt misstatement that our comptroller did, just said just now, and that is he said that the PERS calculations or the VOIA calculations for both Mike Nevin and Dean Haymore were calculated as if they retired on December 2016, and we can get that off the recording in the minutes afterwards, but that is what I noted at the time. That is a false statement. Mike Nevin retired December 2016, and those calcs, that's an accurate statement as far as Mr. Gallagher's saying that. Dean Haymore retired June 30th, 2017, and that's the date effective of those calculations. So keep that in mind as you may get pointed out other errors throughout the process. I'm going to kind of walk you through a process. Throughout this packet that you've seen that I did not have the courtesy or advance notice of seeing until District Attorney Langer forwarded those to me middle to late last week. These and others, these retirements and others previously approved by me or denied by the Commission, as you have recently mentioned, Chairman McBride, have been erroneously referred to as bonuses. Webster's dictionary defines a bonus as money or an equivalent given in addition to an employee's usual compensation. While some will say I'm stooping to semantics, I believe these are incentives, which Webster defines as a payment or concession to stimulate greater output or investment. It is a common practice among highly trained and experienced human resource and senior management professionals. The strategic use of incentives is a sound practice so long as there is a strong underlying logic and fairness in its use. For Story County, our past practices of using incentives include encouraging moderate performing employees approaching retirement to make the decision to do so, thus allowing us the opportunity to assess if they are to be replaced at all, and if so, hopefully at a lesser entry rate of pay, which saves us money. And two, recognizing and rewarding your highest performers for their contribution to our successes, but still basing that decision to do so in large part on the cost savings potentially available by compensating their replacements at a lower level entry rate of pay. Equally important to management professionals is the absolute need to treat your high performers at least as well, if not better, than you do your lesser performing employees. To not do so disincents our high performers and risks forcing them to cut back or throttle back in order to be equally treated. Our research reflects that there has been 17 retirement incentive packages approved in the past 10 years. These involve both elected officials and county staff. Beyond doubt or question, the first two of those, which involve senior county staff, this is in the era of 2008-2007, I believe, was placed on the commission agenda for approval. This was done in part because each dealt with purchasing 2 years of PERS credits, also because this was new territory for the county to consider, and most importantly, we did not yet have a county manager, but were managed by a de novo position then known as the Director of Administration and Budgets, me. I haven't researched at what exact point we fell into the practice of internally approving this incentives, but I'm willing to guess and admit that most, if not all, of the remaining 15 buyouts, including the three in question today, were administratively approved by me as the county manager and did not come before this commission or prior commissions for consideration. For each and every one of the 17, there has always been a benchmark used as a consideration that the county would achieve a neutral return on investment within approximately 1 year of the incumbent's retirement. I admit, as you will see in a minute when we get to the second agenda item, that we didn't always hit 1 year. Sometimes it was much less, as I will also explain, and a few times we ran over by a few weeks. We also morphed into a general practice of capping any consideration of a buyout at 1 year, although I am aware of at least one exception, but recall we still hit or came close to the 1 year ROI mark. So for argument's sake, I will say I approved a maximum of 15 incentive buyouts, all analyzed under the above stated criteria. Some of these were considered to move out the moderate performers, and some were to make sure we consistently treated the high performers at least as fairly as the others, and all were held to the general benchmark of achieving real savings in about a year or less. This is never intended to be a secret. Given the timing, we often had to spread the initial impact over both the current as well as the next subsequent fiscal year, which resulted in our requesting and receiving necessary approvals by the Commission through the augmentation process. Admittingly, we didn't always have to augment. One more recent example of a fully capped employee wanting to retire but needing that extra nudge resulted in tremendous cost savings. With the full cooperation of the elected official, we left the position open for many months, and it is currently filled on a less than full-time allocation basis. When we do finally justify fully filling that position, it will be done at substantial savings by both placing an entry-level grade employee and also substantial reductions via the elimination of dependent medical coverage for any replacement. Some in attendance today, including the comptroller with whom I reviewed the numbers in depth, knew of this and fully supported my decision given the unique circumstances, and I caution all, it is an unsound and unsafe practice to selectively choose without fair and consistent foundational basis who receives incentives. So where do we go from here? That's up to you three. I have advocated to each of you individually that having a factual-based incentive, not bonus, program available to be administered on a case-by-case basis is a sound business practice. Should we make it a policy? I strongly urge you not to, as the circumstances are almost always unique. Could you limit my ability to approve on a case-specific basis to no more than 1 year buyout with the cost break-even to be realized within X number of months? Yes, and I would encourage you to do that. In the meantime, I've been told by the chairman to not do anymore, a directive I totally respect and have and will continue to comply with. So if you please, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, I would now like to walk you through the logic, foundation, and rationale underlying each of the three actions I approved, which Mr. Gallagher is now bringing into question, despite having frequent and ample time to question any and all of us in my office on multiple points of the process, both for the three itemized on this agenda, as well as most, if not all, of the other 12, included a now-retired senior staff employee of his own office. So I'm going to pass out some handouts for you, and you're going to see, you're going to see all three in here. We will only deal with Mike and Dean at this stage. And I'll walk you through each one of them. No, I got my okay, first one, excuse me, let me get my notes.
Give me a second, Pat. Okay.
Apologize. You should have three pages here.
three spreadsheets with penciled annotations.
Okay, so I gotta, well, I've got, I got a whole bunch.
Well, excuse me.
Just three? Is that?
No, excuse me. One set is for you. Pass all of the other sets down. There's each set is good. So Jack takes a set, you take a
each
set.
Each set's two?
No.
Oh.
Just one.
Just one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's extras.
Okay. I got you.
So in that set, you should have three spreadsheets.
Yes.
You there?
Yep.
Okay. Ready for me to keep going?
Sure.
Okay, so there are three spreadsheets, and this is a process we go through to attempt to hit, to do a fiscal analysis of any incentive. The first one up is Mike Nevin. And with Mike, the numbers on the spreadsheet, anybody can throw out any numbers and, you know, make them look good. So what I did was I tried in my penciled notes below to basically give you a more down-to-earth, grassroots look at this. The numbers are within the spreadsheets that were done to my office and always available to Mr. Gallagher, should he have asked. The first one on Mr. Nevin is on the incentive or the buyout, if you will. That amount, it did no good to put a year buyout or incentive into PERS. Mike asked if he could have an equivalent into his Voya account, as did Dean and as did Gary, and it's the same exact dollar amount had we bought a year of PERS. So the cost of that payment to Voya or payments, there were actually two bridging a calendar year for tax purposes, was $39,336. As you can tell, replacing Mr. Nevin, who was topped out in his grade, with a new director at the same grade but an entry-level step, resulted in a first-year savings, gross savings of $40,948, or a first-year net savings of $1,612. So if our target bogey is no more than 52 weeks, usually we broke even in 50 weeks. I also want to point out, again, knowing that each of these circumstances are different, subsequent years, you know, of savings hover around $40,948. Now, I recognize that there are steps in each year that the new director is eligible to receive, those steps being 3.5%. But the rest of it neutralizes itself out, in my opinion, because PERS would have gone up for Mike or the new director. Medicare would have gone up for both. PACT would have gone up for both. Medical insurance would have gone up for both, as would uniform allowances. So the bottom line is this decision of mine paid for itself in less than a year. And I'm going to tell you honestly that I think change anywhere, regardless of whether it's any of these individuals or anything else, change is good. You get a new direction. You get, you know, you get new blood. It's going to be good when I leave. Trust me. What I want to do is take Mr. Gallagher's comments and free relative to sick and annual, and specifically annual, I guess, and I'm going to refer those to our human resource director, Austin Osborne. As I understand, these were handled in a manner that was consistent with our policies and our collective bargaining agreement at the time the request was made. And there are, as Hugh referenced, information contained in Exhibit B3 that it dialogues with that, addresses that, and confirms that what Austin was saying. So maybe we can bring Austin up at a later date while I continue on with Dean versus the contract. So your second spreadsheet, again, same story, different players, is the transition from Dean Haymore to an outside contract. Now, I want to stress there's an interesting item embedded in the sick in the spreadsheet. Gary Hames, an independent contractor, was not our first choice. We always have succession planning. We had a succession plan in this case, but the price tag on the succession plan, or the replacement plan, if you will, got pretty pricey. As you can see in the spreadsheet line where it says Haymore D, capped out at a 148.10.
The total cost load had Dean stayed on board was $187,700. My option A was taking a look at ultimately costing us $258,228. So that was like a, whoa, that's not going to work no matter what. I mean, even if there wasn't a year incentive to Mr. Haymore, you know, quite frankly, that's not going to work. So Gary had gone through extensive training and certification, and he proposed an interesting concept that he might come back as he might be willing to come back as an independent contractor for a fixed rate price. You know the end of the story on that. He did. He approved the contract, and we're off to the races in community development. And again, I'm without getting deep into the weeds of personnel, I'm just going to say change is good. Change is always good. So as you can see, you know, we broke even on the transition. Gary has an outside contract fixed at $136,248. That's it, everything. So the break-even analysis, all we compared when we did this internally in my office, and again, this was always available to Mr. Gallagher had he asked, reflects that we broke even just on salary and benefits in 50 weeks. Now, there are some extra caveats in there that I want to add. That doesn't even include the other cost savings that are embedded into Gary's contract with Battleborn LLC. We no longer have to pay for an automobile like we did for Dean Haymore. We no longer have to pay for fuel like we did for Dean Haymore, nor for phones, cell phones, training and continuing education units, travel and entertainment, and computers and tablets. Also, a beauty with Gary is there are no sick or annual leave accruals or usage. So this, in my opinion, anybody who questions this deal, I question their competency. So the buyout for Dean Haymore, as was mentioned and validated by our comptroller, is $49,783. The first year cost savings just on salary and benefits is $51,542 for a first year savings of $1,669. Subsequent year savings are $51,542 as well. And again, I want to stress, Gary's on a fixed contract. Nothing's going to go up. Nothing. So those are pretty much my comments relative to the methodology and logic behind it. I think I'm going to reserve other comments that I'm prepared to make until after we get through the second agenda item dealing with Mr. Haynes. So if you have any questions of me, I stand by what I did. I will do no more unless you instruct differently as a whole body, and I will respect Commissioner McBride. And I guess one more thing I want to stress. I think there's some poor work and some poor comments done here, but I applaud what Commissioner Gilman has done in asking for a thorough public vetting of this, and I appreciate it deeply. So with that, I'd answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Who wants to start?
I'll start with a thought, statement, and question. I believe the system, Pat, that you just outlined is wonderful. I think it's a good operating system. I think that it makes financial sense to do what you're doing with the folks that work for you. The thing that strikes me as I watch it is it appears to me or seems to me that you're acting more like a private manager in private industry than you are the county manager for Story County. And the reason that I would say that is I can understand this is something that I would do in my company. But here, in this circumstance, I want to at least explore. This commission has the responsibility for appropriations of money in our county. All money. And as that appropriation body, we have responsibility that for everything that's sent or spent out there. And I'm going to suggest that this wasn't brought before this community. It's a couple hundred thousand dollars in payments. I think they make sense. I think the calculations to how you got to them make sense. But you and I know that didn't come before this body for whatever reason. And so what I would ask is, what brought you to the thought process as our county manager? That as where did your authority come from in your mind to move forward on this type of expenditure and commitment to our quality employees?
Okay. Easy question. First off, I'm going to reflect on a comment you made regarding this may be very appropriate in the private sector, and I don't dispute anything. Okay, I don't dispute anything you said. So I'll plead guilty to that, but I'll also tell you oftentimes, and I think I've sat at the bargaining table or the deal-making table with you with prospects and whatnot, and we've said we try to run this county as a business. And again, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but these incentives paid for themselves in about a year in each case. So, yes, you're correct. I did not bring these to the commission. And again, guilty of that, and with my apologies. What led me to that? Commissioner Gilman, I would say, let's just roll back and say in 2007 and 2008, the commission approved the first two of 17. That leaves 15 to go. My then chairman, Von Hess, and I have a slight difference of opinion over how many others may have gone before the commission. I don't think there were any, but there may have been one or two. But we developed a practice over, let's just say, the past 8 or 9 years or so, where we just did them. So this is a practice. The practice stopped once Chairman McBride told me don't do it. But what led me to that point is this is what we've done in the past commissions, and this is what we continue to do through the first number of years during your term at Marshall's, and a slightly less number of years with Commissioner McGuffey. Have I answered your question, sir?
I believe so. You know, it appears to be that a past practice evolved. One of the things that I have witnessed as we've moved forward, I've been in the county for, the better part of 19, 20 years, and I was here when we were a fledgling county and in the dark ages of financial chaos. You were here, I believe you were the sheriff at that time. And so we've had to move forward a transition as a county that's growing in prosperity and changes. And so I can appreciate how in past years that there were policies that were effective, because you didn't have a lot of folks on the ground. You didn't have a lot of boots on the ground. A lot of people were wearing 2 or 3 hats. So I can appreciate that standpoint. I think you and I have had conversations together over my sense of responsibility at this body and the belief that we need to manage our county money very, very carefully. And I would suggest that we are moving, as Mr. Gallagher shared with us earlier, our financial prosperity is growing by the year. And therefore, I believe that the responsibilities we're going to have at managing at a higher and better level than we ever have before are evolving within our lives and our community. So I'm disappointed, I would tell you candidly, and it's not you specifically, I'm disappointed that this took place the way that it did. I applaud the fact that these gentlemen were properly recognized for their services. But I would think that as we move forward in the future that we need to evolve into the 21st century pretty aggressively. And that kind of wraps up my first thought, Marshall.
Okay, thanks. Jack?
Yeah. It's after doing the research, yeah, I see it as a great tool to work with. And Pat, you've actually used it masterfully. Especially, thank you for bringing the numbers. I know we talked about them, but thank you. Having them written down makes a lot more sense. And it's not like, I want everybody out there to know that it's not like we've been sitting on this for months and waiting for this day.
I mean, we've got things been in the works for 2 or 3 months now, like reviewing the county manager's job responsibilities and authority, and then creating related policies on this as well. So, I mean, those are still in the being baked as we as I speak. I think the biggest problem everyone has with this is there's just there was a lack of transparency. I think what you've done is great, and I would have supported it wholeheartedly, but I didn't really know that it was happening. So, and that's where I stand on it. I don't hold anything against what you've done. I think you've done a great job with it. But I think yeah, we have to move forward with the transparency issue.
Hey, Jeff, thanks. Well, I could disagree with very little of your opening comments. I don't think I would agree with where we say you say that we provide an incentive. When we hire somebody, we don't give them the incentive that we're going to buy them any part of PERS or anything else when they retire. I think it's a reward for those who have, the way it's been put up, it's been a reward mostly for people who've excelled and done a great job for the county. Not always has been the case. We know that there are some people who maybe were borderline and they were a little bit short on their years of going into the retirement system. So this was a very equitable way for the county to go ahead and move them along into retirement, move somebody else in at a lower salary, and it's a win-win for everybody. You get a more productive employee, you get somebody out into the retirement. Once they're into PERS, the PERS issue. Where Jack, you know, he agrees with everything along this. I don't know if I would have. I wish it had been brought before the board for approval. And I'm pretty tough, and you know this, when it comes to retirement. I feel that your bonus is a fully taxpayer funded retirement for the rest of your life once you retire, after putting in all your years of dedicated service to city, county, or state, wherever it is. So you might have been able to convince me, but I don't know if you would have, because it's already gone that point. So you might have been able to convince me. I'm kind of teetering, saying you probably wouldn't have got me. You might have got those two, but you probably wouldn't have got me. But with that said, I know this has been the past practice, and I understand it, and I appreciate it, especially when I look at the list of some of the people who've moved on over the course of the time with the county. I think going forward, I think one of the things I was thinking about that just came back to me is that, Lance and I have been here for 5 years, and Jack's been here for 3. I don't think we've had any early retirements since we've been here. So
I would disagree with that.
Okay.
I mean, I really don't want to get into specific personnel
okay.
actions.
All right.
But
I don't remember doing any buyouts, and I don't remember seeing any paperwork on any buyouts, and I wasn't unfamiliar with anybody receiving a payout since I've been a county commissioner.
Really? May I remind you of one that you attended the retirement party at the palace earlier this summer, I believe?
And?
Okay, well, we'll talk offline.
All right.
I don't want to get down into individual personnel, but I can assure you that there was at least one in an office that was a step 10 capped out.
Okay.
That is the one I referenced that we have not replaced full time.
Okay. Yeah, all right, very good. So I'm not here to cast stones, but my thought is going forward. I'm like Jack. Everybody wants transparency in the future. Upon the recommendation of your office, bring it before the board, and if we deem that it's a legitimate request, I'm sure we go along with it. But this is where we stand now. I mean, this happened, and. So there's some sour grapes out there, especially on one individual who came to us, and we denied it. So, and that's how I think it should be going forward, is on a case-by-case basis on whether, you know.
Do you have a minute? I'd like to read a statement into the record.
Go right ahead.
We're moving forward. A bit lengthy. First, I'm disappointed with the procedures, or I should say the lack thereof, used in these instances. I would have preferred that it came through this board. And I've made that clear. Spent a lot of time looking at the numbers and the figures and all the parties involved. For an expenditure of this kind, this should have been put in the budget, should have an appropriation approved by the commission, and it should cover the payments. If this was done after the budget was initially approved, then there should have been a budget amendment provided to the commission before the payments were approved and paid out. I'm disappointed that no commission was briefed on the expenditures ahead of time. And this fact, along with the fact that the typical paperwork wasn't used, gives everybody here a bit of concern that something improper was going on. And that's unfortunate. I think we have to have full disclosure and transparency. But first, these types of payments have been done in the past. And although not in perhaps the precise way these took place, this is not out of some of the blue expense. Buyouts are a commonly used technique to save money and on occasion to move someone out which is no longer performing where they should be. And I think Mr. Whitten, County Manager Whitten, was clear on his and direction. Second, there's nobody in the county, and perhaps no one ever, who has worked in this county who gave as much as these three men have to our county and its residents. Each of them has given their entire adult life and the best years of their lives to the good people of our Story County. How much reward is almost a lifetime of work worth? 30 years in most cases for most of them. They've suffered physical injuries during the course of their workforce, some very serious. That'll be with them forever. Dean Haymore, for example, underwent 17 surgeries that were all associated with injuries working here on our county on the job. So you have to decide how much something like that's worth. Most importantly, their efforts were key in elevating our county from the verge of financial implosion to a shining example of success admired around our entire country. So how much is success worth in government employment? They've been key players in our county's current very strong and very healthy financial position. Third, there's no indication whatsoever, not even a whiff of evidence, that Pat Whitten somehow profited financially from these payments. None. This is despite the comptroller's office and the district attorney's office reviewing the issues that have taken place in detail. To me, this indicates that Pat is being truthful about the purpose of the payments, which is a reward to a lifetime of service and clear the way for new blood to come into our county. And it should be noted that these were not all payments to particular friends of Pat Whitten. In fact, I'm going to suggest that in the case of Dean Haymore, there was some high-level mutual animosity that existed in the county that I was aware of. It's unusual for retiring public employees to get a reward. I suppose that may be true. But is it wrong? Especially given the facts here, my answer is no, it's not wrong. It does deserve an example to other, and it serves as an example to other county workers, employees, that their work is appreciated and success can be rewarded even in a government employment. I have to say that this concept appeals very much to me. Story County has a very different approach to business and life and managing than other local governments. And this has resulted in a tremendous amount of success at our door today. The difference has created huge financial benefits for our county. Perhaps this type of reward for service and financial impact or job success should be looked into for the future. But this should be done as a formal policy, not on a ad hoc basis. I strongly believe we should immediately revise the county manager's job description. We've been discussing that for a couple of months now, to ensure that all future payments of this type come before the commission ahead of time, and to ensure our budget appropriations are handled better in a very disciplined and respectful way. The prosperity that we move toward is going to absolutely demand that we have that level of 21st century approach and professionalism. As for anything else, I'm reluctant to recommend anything further in the absence of a formal recommendation or a finding, either from my district attorney's office or some other investigative group. If the DA has something further to add or to recommend, I ask that it be put in writing and perhaps presented at the January 16th meeting, but at this point, I'm not aware of anything. I do want to point out that the great work done by our county comptroller, Hugh Gallagher, it takes political courage to bring these kinds of issues to light. The county residents can take heart in the fact that this was brought before the public for a full and very transparent hearing. And so will the revision to the job description. And secondly, I'd like to compliment our DA, Ann Langer, and her office for communicating robustly on this issue with all of us, sincerely, aggressively, professionally. Her input, for me, has been incredibly helpful. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner Gilman. Anything else to add, Jack?
Very well. Okay. I would request that Austin be called to the podium to explain his thoughts on the discrepancy between what the comptroller is claiming and what we processed relative to vacation leave for Mr. Nevin.
Okay. Yeah, Austin, if you'd come up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, Austin Osborne for the record. I'll disclose on this. The first time I saw these materials is when the agenda packet was put together. So there's some limited time I've had to review the material and prepare for anything. The first time that I had seen anything regarding this payout of annual and sick leave was at the time of this. Mr. Gallagher put an email in here, and it's pretty short, so maybe I'll just go ahead and read the whole thing. It's in his exhibit. It's in here. It is exhibit B3. It just says, Hugh, this is from me to Hugh. Question, the comptroller's office comes to me on a pretty regular basis, either himself or Jennifer or his other staff, regarding questions, you know, how do we pay something out, how do we comply with a contract, you know, whatever it is. And I applaud that team effort on a usual basis, so we make sure we're all on the same page when we're making expenditures for employees in various matters or interpreting contracts. So it says, Hugh, based on a question, says Austin, you know, he needs some material. Mike Nevin announced his retirement at the time at the former collective bargaining agreement and the current policy were effective, respectively. Bargaining with the ASME group at this time is still in negotiations. The purpose of that preamble was this. As you know, we make a strong effort to treat all employees, management and non-management, equitably, that including the offering of sick and annual leave and accruement payments. But the purpose of that is we've always tried to take the policies and align them as much as possible with the general employees' contracts, because the general employees are not as specific as police, fire, for example. And then there's the very directive in here per the question. Mike's leave payout shall conform to current policy, and it is consistent with the prior CBA. The current policy says that you can accrue up to 240 hours of leave, and you can only be paid out 240 hours of leave. 240 hours comes from NRS. So when I see this document here that a substantially different amount exceeding $6,000 in annual leave was paid to Mike Nevin, I don't know where that came from. 240 is the number. 240 has always been the number. Every time an employee leaves the county, it's the number. So I don't have an answer for you that other than the directive that I provided.
And I do want to make... All I did was concur with Austin's email.
What's it? And I do want to make one important clarification that Mike Nevin was not an AFSCME employee. He's a management employee, so he would not be subject to the AFSCME contract. He was subject under this case to
but
policy
602. But treated the same. It's so treated the same.
Somewhat the same. But
okay, but let me ask you a question. On these hours, the 362.99 hours, has it always been 240 hours, or was the prior CB allow you to acquire to accrue more than the 240 hours?
You can accrue up to 240 hours in a calendar year. So the way the NRS is structured, and I've gone through and researched this, you get up to the calendar year with 240 hours. If you exceed 240 hours by the time you reach New Year's, then you lose you lose a lot of time. You lose anything that you've accrued beyond 240. What happens is if you didn't use a lot of leave the year before, and then the second year you go beyond January and you work your way down, you can get beyond 240, and you can get yourself up around 338, I think, hours is what it is, because the calendar doesn't quite match up with a 240.
Okay.
But if you don't use that by New Year's, then you go all the way back down to 240. Now, again, if you don't take vacation, then it starts clicking its way back up until the next year. So sometimes employees that haven't used all their leave in that situation will retire, and they will have more than 240 hours accrued, which is okay, but they can't be paid out any more than 240, and that's in our policy and consistent with NRS.
Okay.
You just said you can and you can't.
No, you cannot. You cannot be paid out anything more than 240 hours.
You can accrue more hours, you can't accrue more.
Even though you may have accrued more because you haven't quite met New Year's yet.
Okay, so this is simply an accounting error on our part?
I don't know. I don't want to answer that because I don't have an honest answer.
Well, if we paid him out more money than he was entitled, it was a mistake. I mean.
But this is the first we've seen this documentation.
Okay, all right. Good enough. All right.
DA Lehner? Is it appropriate to ask for that overpayment of annual pay? Is it okay to ask for that money back from these people that are now basically long gone, or what? Is there a time limit? Or?
I don't think there's a time limit, but if it was paid out, they're going to always have an argument that we had an agreement, I got that money, and if they made a mistake, I thought that I had earned that money. I don't know what the other side of the argument is. As far as, I guess it's like going to the grocery store, and everybody's had this probably happen when the teller at the grocery store gives you back more money, and you're sitting there with it.
Yeah.
So you know it doesn't belong to you, and you either give it back or you take it. But in this situation, I don't. There's no issue on
it. Sure. And then another argument that's going to be out there is that there was not enough time afforded to take that annual leave. Here's a guy who worked every other weekend on call for the water.
Right.
Because there was nobody else to do it.
Right.
So there wouldn't have been time to, maybe there wasn't time afforded. I mean, there's a lot of arguments.
There's so many arguments that my answer would be there's so many arguments.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I know the answer that you're, the question, if you make a mistake, did this person know it? He just thought he had this many hours and he was paid for it.
Okay.
So I don't have the other side of the story.
And I don't want to argue the decision because I think it's fair, but I think it still merits how did this happen. And if my office caused it, fine, we'll own it. And if the comptroller's office caused it, he'll own it. But as Austin has specifically mentioned, I'm exactly the same boat. None of us saw any of this prior to Thursday's publishing of the agenda. The only thing I got was the courtesy of the two staff reports that you did, and that's compliments to the district attorney who asked me if I had it. That's it.
Okay. Do you want to add anything, Austin, while you're there?
I don't.
Okay, why don't we open up for public comment?
Thank you.
And what we're going to do is we are going to have some ground rules, is that I am going to limit speaking to 3 minutes. And anybody who wants to get in line and speak, please do not reiterate what the person in front of you already said. Bring up new facts or new points of interest. So, who'd like to go first? Mr. Toll?
For the record, Sam Toll, Gold Hill. Disappointed that I'm on the clock, but that be that as it may. I'm delighted to hear that change is on the way. I think that this issue has bad optics all around the county. We're talking about an arbitrary decision. It's clear that there's no policy that states we are going to give money to people based upon an amount of time, regardless of how much they make and what kind of service that they've given to the county. The transparency that exists, and I guess I'll make a point. I brought this matter up in the meetings in June when we were talking about the budgets and questioned it there, the fact that Hugh is being thrown under the bus for surprising everyone about the numbers shouldn't be a surprise, although I must say that I should have brought it up as well. Again, this is an objective and a subjective decision that's being made based upon past practice. Now, none of us know what that past practice is, but I can tell you this. Mr. Witten, when you talk about stimulating productivity by incentivizing people to do their job, we're talking about people that make $1,000 to $1,200 a day. These are two gentlemen, Mr. Haynes and Mr. Mr. Haynes, who are paying upwards of $230,000 a year. That is a spectacular incentive to do the job, and I would argue that, and I would share Mr. McBride's sentiment, that the reward that they get is the spectacular retirement package that that we have funded them. However, I have a specific question. Exhibit B2, which Mr. Gallagher has presented to us, struck me as very interesting. Is it county practice to allow an individual to sign and commit and spend $36,000 as both the employer and the employee, as Mr. Nevin has done in Exhibit B2? I find that remarkable because that is the epitome of the lack of transparency.
What was your question?
Is it customary? Is it standard county procedure for an employee to sign his own benefit statement, as Mr. Nevin has done in Exhibit B2, where he is signing as both the employer and the employee, putting $36,000 into his Voya account?
As you said, yeah.
I find that remarkably opaque. We heard about, I don't want to go into the weeds about Mr. Haynes and his So he's next?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'll save my comments for him then. This has bad optics. I think that without a clear policy, then this is what I would call and consider cronyism, taking favors regardless of whether you've been compensated or not.
My free
wow, look at that.
Thanks.
Okay.
All right. More public comments. Hearing none? Okay. Did you have a follow-up, Mr. Gallagher?
Or
did you have a follow-up? You went back up to the podium.
I was just didn't know if you guys.
Okay.
I do have a couple comments.
Yeah, go ahead.
So you, in relation to Mr. Toll's question, you said that Mike had signed his own wish list.
He did, yeah.
Okay, is that the standard for that?
No, it's not.
Okay.
No.
So who normally fills
it would have
that
been,
out?
It would have been either Mr. Witten or Mr. Osborne, I believe. All of those termination papers should have one or the other on that.
So they would have to get that form from?
It's a clerical error because it still had to be processed.
Okay.
It's just a clerical error.
All right.
You had more comments?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to comment on a couple of Mr. Witten's items. One that I should have asked him for this material, and I've pretty much kind of done that in a memo that I sent Austin Osborne on October 26th. And there was also a meeting with us with me on October 25th, I believe, with the Human Resources Department and Mr. Witten, in which I was provided those Voya statements which I was asked for. So any other material that is there that is now coming forward, I do not have, but it was certainly asked for. And as far as him not being briefed, I asked him in an email on Friday if he wanted to be briefed, and I did not get a response to that. So with that, I mean, this is one of the toughest things I've ever had to do in my life, and it's not very pleasant, but I certainly wanted to be fair about it to everybody.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Gallagher.
So with that, I'll...
Okay, well, As Commissioner Gilman has stated in his narrative there, that you don't want to go any further with this.
The thing that that I would ask, Mr. Chairman, is that we move forward expeditiously with the new county manager job description. And I'd like to see that on the calendar for the January 16th meeting. And I'd like to address in that particular document on how we're going to move forward. I think it would be fair to Pat to have that. I'd certainly want it if I was sitting in his chair. I'd like to see more oversight from the comptroller's office on all expenditures that have to do with county money and proceeds. But I'd like to see that that document move forward expeditiously.
Yeah.
That would be my motion.
All right.
Yeah, well, my motion would be to just finish up this county manager job description, responsibilities and authority. And I'd also like to, I know that Mr. Morris is working on a policy as well to address this buyout.
Okay. So whose motion do we want to go with over here?
Mine.
Okay. Both Lance's. All right.
I'll second that motion.
Okay.
You want to public comment one more time? Or?
Yeah, I'll do that. That's we'll call for public comment one more time. Ms. Bard.
Really?
I think so.
Yeah, your
Lance
won't be here. You might want to wait till 16.
Okay. Nicole Bard, Story County resident. Quick question. Is the list of the 17 that have been done since 2006 or 78, whatever, is that now public record and can I get a copy of who those people are? You've introduced it as part of this discussion, and Pat referred to it as part of the pattern of practice in the last many years. I'd like to know who those people are for me to look at, you know, what the pattern of distribution is. It's one thing to say we use incentives to incent high performers, but as with discrimination law, and you know this, if those all just happen to be one type of person and there's no diversity in it and it's either adversely or as a way to enrich, I'd like to see, of those 16, what the profile of those payouts have been.
Okay, I tell you what, we get a legal opinion first.
Okay.
Okay, because it might deal with personnel issues. So you might, you know, you might get it, you might not. So,
well, I would take, you can take the names out if you would give me years. I mean, I can work on a format, years of service, length of service, types of jobs, salary at the beginning, salary at the end. Anything I can do to look at that to determine if there's been adverse impact either for, you know, or against other people.
Okay.
Let me shed a little light. First off, there is no list.
The names you referred to.
It's my turn. What we did was we did a query off the accounting system that the comptroller's office has full access to, and we looked for large payments to PERS. Whether or not the DA opines that names tied to this, you know, are acceptable or not, you know, they're available internally to us through that system. That's how we identified 17 of them. So I would tell you that, you know, subject to the DA either approving it or a public records request to the comptroller, he should be able to do the same exact thing that we were able to query off of his system.
So that's a yes?
I'm not answering yes or no. I'm saying
I need to look into it.
Okay. That's fair. No. Yeah. But do you understand what I'm after?
Yes.
I am saying there is no list, and I'm saying that we queried the comptroller system.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? All right. I have a motion on the floor from Commissioner Gilman.
Second.
By Commissioner McGuffey. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Mr. Chairman, if I may also, I'd like to make one follow-up comment. I specifically requested staff to do this review, and I just want to congratulate and thank, from the bottom of my heart, Hugh Gallagher. This has, I know, been a very, very difficult task for him, and I think he's done it honorably and fairly and professionally, and so... I thank you personally.
for the effort you've gone to on this.
Okay. With that, let's go ahead and we will we'll recess as the Fire Protection District Board. We're going to recess as the County Commission. And we're going to convene as the Story County Fire Board. Bringing this up now to item 23, discussion of possible action. This is a review of 21. Review of monetary payments described as buyouts to the fire chief in December 2016 and June 2017 by the county manager. The board may take action, including but not limited to, determine whether the county manager had authority to make the payments, referring to the matter to an outside agency for evaluation, the violation of NRS, or determine whether to try to recover part or all of the payments. Okay, Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the second half of the agenda item because former fire chief was in the 474 Fire District, but you will still use the same exhibits or most of them. Exhibit A indicates the monetary payments in the amount of $55,086.79, and a contribution to the PERS retirement system of $45,534.73. Exhibit D reflects the initial payment of $35,000 into a Voya deferred income account for the payroll week ended December 16, 2016. The explanation on this document was described as note for buyout. Exhibit D1 reflects the second half of the payment of $20,086.79 for the payroll period ending June 16, 2017. And note at the bottom of the page, this transaction was approved by County Manager Pat Whitten on June 13, 2017. That pretty much explains what has happened in the past with Mr. Haymore and Mr. Nevin. D2 represents a document from Nevada PERS with regard to a purchase of service agreement on behalf of Gary Haynes. This document was approved by County Manager Whitten on June 13, 2017. At the present time, and still at the present time, we are unable to confirm the payment amount of $45,534 from the Nevada Employee Public Retirement System. The reason for this is that, and I have checked with them, they have cited confidentiality because Mr. Haynes is a former employee, and so consequently, none of their files are can be reviewed by myself or anybody else. I was given a couple of documents, but I still cannot at this point in time, with certainty, understand why or how the calculation of the $45,534.75 occurred. I am assuming, because PERS did tell me this, that it was at the current rates and not the 1988 rates, which brings up some questions as to whether or not these 8 months and 14 days was actually earned or not. There is a statement from Human Resources, Austin Osborne, to somebody at PERS requesting that because of some documents that were there, that this should be approved. The documents are various things of employment security reports and whatever, which equals to the 8 months and 14 days. However, the current rate, having it paid at the current rate, we probably should have at that point in time tried to calculate what that was, but the Nevada PERS has cited confidentiality, as the Human Resources Department on the calculation of that amount. And that's all I have.
So, yes. state agencies aren't usually willing to give up any information. I guess we know that with the Department of Taxation, don't we?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So anyway, we're pretty much, I mean, this is the same...
same scenario.
Same scenario. I don't wish to rehash my comments again. It would just be... it'd be like saying I'm going to redouble, right? So.
Any comments?
Say again.
Any comments?
I suppose the only comment that that comes to mind is that we have a comptroller in place for a reason. And when we are handling our county money, that's his responsibility. And I can't imagine not giving him every resource necessary for him to properly do his job. And so I'm not sure why these documents are coming from different desks and different places, and they haven't had any fiscal review or impact. And so my comment would be that I think we need to revisit the importance of the comptroller's desk and revise how we're going to go forward to make absolutely certain that we're analyzing and balancing our financial requirements.
And with with reference to the payment to the PER system, in reference to Hames, either there's no way to go back to when he was first hired by the county. I believe he was hired by the Sheriff's Department at the time, so he was still under police fire. So we don't know if it was an error on the county side or an error at the Sheriff's Office or an error at PERS for not going ahead and getting him documented when he was initially employed.
I think he was here when he was a teenager, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
He was firefighting.
He was. He was. So.
May I walk you through the numbers and comment?
Sure, go right ahead, because okay. We have them right here.
This will be your third spreadsheet that was provided to you. This deals with the transition from Gary Hames to what's marked as an internal candidate, who we all know is Chief Jeff Nevin. This is the one when I told you that I would not hit quite on the 12 months. We didn't. We missed it by 5 weeks. But again, that also gave us the opportunity, segueing back to the last agenda item, to bring Gary on board ultimately as a contract employee and save us substantial monies in the community development efforts. So, leaving the numbers aside on the spreadsheet and going to the penciled notations. The buyout in Gary's case, this is just the incentive, the 1 year with Voya, was $55,087, and that, again, does not, to be crystal clear, because there's a lot of confusion and clouding going on here with statements, that does not include the first retro payment. The first year savings in bringing Chief Nevin on, who was a battalion chief at the time, who was, quite frankly, paid darn near as much as the chief, isn't much. It's $50,237. So we got a deficit in the first year of $4,850, which we do hit every once in a while. We captured that back after 5 weeks. Our first year savings, or our second year savings, excuse me, is $39,945. And that includes a rough estimate for Jeff's last step to take him up to the salary that was Gary's at the, within Gallagher's spreadsheet. Year three and beyond, we capped, so our savings should be right around $44,795. And any of those should have been neutral because had Gary's PERS, Gary's med benefits, Gary's PAC, Gary's whatever else is on here gone up, so with Jeff's respectively. So again, we broke even in just a little over a year. I've got some additional comments I'm going to make, but I'll hold those back. I want to talk about my knowledge of PERS, and again, at the appropriate point, I'm going to defer to Austin over the paying at the 1988 rate as opposed to paying current rates. With respect to my approval of a one-time payment in the amount of $45,534.75 to PERS And this is where I get confused. Comptroller Gallagher keeps saying, well, I can't verify the payment from PERS. Nothing was paid from PERS. This was a payment to PERS. So, I caution you to make sure that you're getting absolute clarity, you know, on what the comptroller is trying to say. But he says on his report on page 4, this is a payment from, and no, this was clearly a county payment to PERS. This was not considered to be a buyout as was originally listed, but as a retroactive, corrective, one-time makeup payment where the initial 8 months and 14 days of Gary's employment, he exceeded the PERS threshold of 1,039 hours, but the county did not pay into PERS. With assistance from Melissa in Hugh's very own office, we were able to reasonably verify that he had indeed worked and were compelled to correct, as we had done in at least one other circumstance back in the days of when Mary Lou and I were working together. We had an elected official, same situation. Again, this is not a buyout, but it is an expensive righting of a wrong dating back to March of 1988. And Commissioner Gilman, you know I love you like a brother.
Yep.
But you also know that there are times we disagree, and you know there are times where I'm not going to bite my tongue. I'm compelled right now to call BS when there's BS, not on you, sir, but to say you guys need to know everything, not just a limited item. You've repeatedly praised the comptroller for the great job he's done, and I want to caveat everything I say and make it crystal clear that I appreciate and concur with the directions and the directives that you provided, Commissioner Gilman, in requesting an independent and thorough review to air those publicly as we are doing today. This is certainly the right action to take. That said, the Comptroller's staff report is riddled with error and misstatements and omissions of fact. Starting from the top, the agenda language calls into question my authority to make payments for three separate employees, yet fails to consider, state, or acknowledge the 10-year past practice of similar incentive payments to other employees, including the one in the comptroller's very own office that he darn well knew about a few years back. The staff summary, inappropriately, in my opinion, references policy 042, which does indeed pertain to the requirement that contracts and agreements are to be reviewed by myself, the district attorney, and the comptroller. It totally ignores the fact that there never were any contracts or written agreements to review here. This is just simply payment. Further, it seems to paint the picture that the comptroller was totally dark on these payments, in the dark on these payments, a fact which is patently false. First, and I state clearly for the records, these incentive buyouts were reviewed by myself in detail with the comptroller, a fact which he now conveniently forgets, each and every one of these. Second, no, zero questions were raised in December 2016 or January 2017 when all of Mike Nevin's Voya payment requests were submitted to and processed by the comptroller, and the bulk portions of Dean's and Gary's Voya payments were similarly submitted and processed. Further, the comptroller states that there are no written materials in relation to the agreement provided by the county manager for these payments. This is outright not true. Detailed documentation, much has been provided in your packet today, was submitted during my initial review with the comptroller well in advance of the December and January and June Voya payment requests, and they were once again provided together with additional information requested by him during and after a sit-down review yet again with him, our HR director, and our staff management analyst on what we show is November 8th, not October, as Hugh referenced. Furthermore, you know, I'm hearing this. I didn't know anything. I don't know what to do. Well, I'm going to give you an email exchange between our comptroller and Gary Haynes where I'll read you just the first sentence. You can see the rest where it says specifically, thanks for talking through this with me today. By the way, this is dated October 18th, 2016. The retirement costs will likely be as follows. And Gary goes on to detail. Ironically, I didn't know this because I hadn't seen this until a few days ago. Hugh obviously had, but forgot. He identifies sick leave, annual leave, PERS, and the total, not only for him, but for also Rob Dufresne. So these are budgetary issues. And to deny knowledge is patently false. Finally, excuse me, let me catch up here. Also included in your packet, which the comptroller submitted, is some sort of form, which is entitled Story County Early Retirement Incentive Program Application. Now, the picture's getting painted. If that form would have been submitted, all would have been good. No one in my office has ever seen that form before. Maybe we've used it. All of us have short memories, but there is no policy backing that form. Hughes provided that form, yet he never asked for it, not on these three, nor to the best of my knowledge on any of the rest. And then I want to go back to something that's been said as it, man, forget that. That was the old agenda item. Regardless, the bottom line is, if the comptroller wanted us to submit this form, all he had to do was ask. In fact, if he had any questions on anything, all he had to do was ask. I was recently questioned, as recently as a week ago. I did two internet searches on an individual that I was trying to find for property remedy issues relative to the sewer plant project. I spent 98 cents online and backed that up with another 98 cents. I got questioned from the comptroller's office on 98 cents and 98 cents. I don't have a problem with that. That's their job. I explained it. I put it on my county credit card. And again, I've got no problem. But if you're going to question 98 cents along the way, let's question 50,000, 60,000, 70,000. Question it, we'll give you the answers. And in closing again, I don't question the legitimacy or the need for this request or a thorough investigation, but I believe and maintain that the investigation performed and presented today by our comptroller in much disagreement with Commissioner Gilman is shoddy, inaccurate, misleading, and of incredibly poor quality. After multiple discussions on not only these three buyouts, but probably 12 others, I'm pretty much done talking about it, except with you guys. So if you have questions, I'd be happy to answer. But, you know, I'm as disappointed as you are, but in a slightly different perspective.
Dan, I'm going to rebut this, Mr. Chairman. The Exhibit A that you have noting those payments for Mike Nevin, Dean Haymore, and Gary Haynes, I was never noticed of, period. There has been several years back conversations because Dean Haymore and Gary Haynes and Mike Nevin came up to that attention. Dean Haymore even actually had it on his budget for 2017 that he had a bonus thing that we took off him. The fact remains is that Gary Haynes and Dean Haymore were giving 15% longevity in addition to their salary. And at one point in time, there was talk about giving them a year's of PERS, which I did not like. So to say that I knew this before it happened, absolutely false. I'll tell you that.
Well, that's a difference of opinion. I stand by my comments.
You can stand by
my
comments.
I believe Mr. Osborne will chime in on the question regarding the 1988 payment on PERS. He has some information.
Sure, go ahead, Austin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, Austin Osborne, for the record. I'm going to narrow the scope of my discussion to what Mr. Whitten had talked about. There's the incentive stuff that's all been discussed about, and then there's another component to Mr. Haynes that had to do with a correction of past practice. So if you go back to the personnel records that we keep in our office look like this. You know, they're organized, they're bound, they're in some kind of form and fashion, they're complete, they have table of contents, you know, things like that that you would expect to see in a record. You go back to the 80s, you know, follow the people in the 80s, I mean, things were different back then, but that wasn't the case. So in this case, the personnel record of that time around 1986, 87, 88, 90, up to probably 98 or something like that, is a piece of cardboard that has a grid on it, and trying to keep track of what the employee does is written on this grid, and when stakes are made, there's whiteout on it, and then there's scratches into the whiteout with new pen on top of the whiteout, and then there's arrows and whatever else you can possibly think of. So that's a true depiction of what that personnel record looks at the time, and inaccurate information or missing information. Then you go past that and you go into the substance, which limited. There's some half-completed and not-completed documents, and one is a carbon copy of a signed document, but it doesn't match another document. So the problem is, in 1987 and 88, The Gary had says, you know, I believe that I had worked, you know, this year to this year under these certain conditions, and those certain conditions were subject to police fire purse. He was a dispatcher, firefighter, and there were some other things in that personnel record. So, and I won't talk about personnel records beyond that other than that content. So going back, and what the problem is, he's working as a police fire position. There's enough records in his personnel file to show that it's a police fire position, but it was never submitted to PERS properly, and so he wasn't paid police fire PERS during that period of time, and it is quoted as 0 years, 8 months, and 14 days. So we had worked quite a bit, including myself with Comptroller, with the Comptroller's assistant, Jennifer McCain, and I believe it was Melissa at the time. I know it was Melissa at the time, to try to find as many records we possibly can to reconstruct the past during this period. And so I come up with a document, submitted it to PERS with attachments, saying, you know, here's all the information we have, here's everything that we can do to reconstruct the past. Will you all please approve police fire PERS for this period of time? PERS came back, because they're very specific on their policies, and said we can't, based on our policies, approve that. So the adjustment, but you can go ahead and pay into it if you want to, but PERS just can't approve that package and sign off on it. So there's enough information in that file to reconstruct that period of time to, and then to go ahead and make that adjustment payment into PERS to make Gary whole for that component.
Okay. I think the argument there would be is that he was a lower salaried individual at that point. And should the PERS contribution be made based upon whatever the rate would have been based on his salary and adjusted for inflation, something like that, as opposed to being the payment going in at current salary at retirement?
So I looked into that with PERS, and that's a legitimate statement. If there's two ways of doing it. If PERS would have accepted that material as it was per their policies, then they would have charged at that rate in the 80s, and then they would have charged interest for all the years that have occurred since then.
Right.
And PERS' argument for that is our PERS system, you never paid into the system all of those years for that difference. It isn't just 1 year, it compounds, and that interest is to make up for all the investment the PERS would have done over the time to make money.
Well, you know what the rate of return was from 2088 to this current day.
Exactly.
So you take that average rate of return.
Exactly.
It's a very simple mathematical formula.
And then the other option is, PERS, if you're going to do what they call a cost buyout for that, we won't accept the first method. You can't use that method, Story County. Then you can only use the second method. Then the PERS policy, they quote NRS under 286, says that you must do it this way, and it happens to be the 2017 number.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Austin.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And it's 1988, not 2088.
Did I say 2088?
Yeah.
Well, that's what we got.
It's
you
like
back.
Futuristic.
Correct me. So thank you. Thank you for that.
It's like that back the ruler comes out.
I don't know. Is something to add to this, Jack?
Not really. I think we're back to the same spot where we were on the last agenda item.
Yeah.
Oh,
well. But we're going forward.
We're making it.
We're going forward. So with that, do you have anything else you want to say, Pat?
No, sir.
Okay. Well, we're good. We'll open this up for public comment. Ms. Bard.
Nicole Bard, Story County resident. I've been sitting back there waiting to hear the words, the buck stops here. This has been going on for quite a long time, it appears. Let's forget about what happened before the current commissioners were seated through election. But I remember being in meetings this year where these things were, in fact, discussed. Sam Toll made a comment, and I was there, but that he even questioned in a June meeting the payouts that were occurring. And the body language as well as the response was very relaxed about it, oh, this is just something we do, it's performance, it's okay.
And in listening to this and in listening to the outrage and the disappointment, I'm waiting for the commission to essentially step up and say the words, you know, Pat, yeah, you've been doing all this stuff, and yeah, you know, it's kind of been happening, but we haven't been paying attention. And it seems to me that if it weren't for God-loving Rob Dufresne coming up here and saying, hey, my friends just got these payouts, I want mine too, because he couldn't see any rhyme or reason or rationale for them or a policy for them or any of that. It seems to me that if it weren't for Rob coming up and asking for that in a very public manner, that you guys would not necessarily be looking at this, that you would be continuing to just let this stuff happen. So while I like to point out where, you know, we have problems in the county with management, et cetera, I've got to take Pat's side on this one. Where were you when this was going on? Maybe he was wrong in not highlighting to you when you came in as new to say, hey, you know, here's kind of how I operate here, the things that I'm doing, and so on and so forth, like I do when I would get a new manager, to make sure that what I was doing wasn't going to cross over the line. So maybe let's fault him for that. But at the end of the day, governance and the responsibility for what happens under you resides with you, and you guys have been letting this go on. My comment, I'm done.
Thank you. More public comment?
Of course.
Shocking the truth. I know.
For the record, Sam Toll, Gold Hill, I find it just remarkably disingenuous that Mr. Whitten would subject Mr. Gallagher to the comments that he did. I think that, you know, this was done behind closed doors. Mr. Whitten, you've already stated for the fact that this was your decision.
Mr. Cole, I'd like you to go ahead and address the board from now on and not individuals up here.
Okay, very good. So it's been clear that Mr. Whitten has taken ownership of this position. He has suggested that this was something that he did on his own. There's a lack of county policy that defines how he may proceed. And so to somehow suggest that this is the fault of the controller is disingenuous. I think, however, that this speaks to, and I'll kind of piggyback on what Ms. Bard said, you know, I wrote a piece about leadership this last Sunday in my blog post, and basically at some point we've got to take ownership of what we do. Pappy Smith, founder of Nevada's Gambling, owner of Herald's Club, said, you know what, I live my life by a simple statement, do what you know you should do, don't do what you know you shouldn't do. I think that if I was sitting where you sit now today, I would be looking for a clawback on every single dime we've paid. You know, you've got people in the county who are making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year, single moms trying to support themselves, and you got three guys who just pulled in a golden parachute of $215,000. They didn't work very hard for that money, and that money comes out of our pockets. You know, the reality is that, again, if I sat where you had said, I would also shred up Mr. Nevin, Mr. Hames' contract, and I would fire Mr. Whitten. We've got people in this country who are losing their careers for pinching people's fannies. We fired Jason Van Havel, taking 4 months to do it, for a similar indiscretion, and yet our pockets have just been picked to the tune of $215,000. In my mind, that's criminal, and if I was sitting where you were sitting, I would do a little more and have a little more teeth in my leadership than I'm seeing today. I had employees steal from me. They walked out of my shop in handcuffs. And, you know, I think that the optics that are being delivered to the citizens of Story County based upon your leadership or lack thereof in this case speaks volumes. And I hear about it every day, and I can tell you I'm going to hear more about it later. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ayers.
Hi, Steve Ayer, longtime resident. Some of you I've known for a very long time, and I know this is very difficult on all of you. And I'm really happy that some of these things were brought up and brought to light so that they can be discussed openly. We go back to the old days when deals were done in the back room, and I don't think that's happened in a very long time. I think there's been a lack of communication, but now that that's being brought out into the open, some of the ideas that you guys have come up with are phenomenal. You know, we're moving into the 21st century, and, you know, the lack of communication because one department maybe doesn't speak the same language as another doesn't mean that one person's trying to get over on another. I think that everybody has the best of intentions, and in long term, discussions like this are really going to benefit the county. And it's been difficult, and I'm not laying any blame on anybody. I think it's great that you guys are bringing this to light. And Commissioner Gilman, you know, your ideas in the future, I think are great. So, you know, I've seen a lot of things brought out here pointing fingers at people, but I personally don't see that. I'm glad to see the stuff's actually coming out into the public venue now. And I got to thank you for bringing it out this way. I really do. I know it's tough, and this conversation wouldn't happen 30 years ago, and now it really is coming out. So, you know, I really want to thank all the parties involved here, and I think the commission is doing a great job of bringing this forward. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any public comment?
Great, Ben.
Okay.
He needs a break.
Okay.
Break. 5 minutes.
Okay. All right. We'll take a recess for about 5 minutes. Come back.